Melbourne Writers Festival acknowledges the peoples of the Kulin Nation, the traditional owners of the land on which this event was recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Hello, I'm Michaela Maguire, Artistic Director of Melbourne Writers Festival. You're listening to a conversation recorded live at our 2023 festival. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider making a donation to Melbourne Writers Festival. As a not-for-profit organisation, inspiring, thoughtful and challenging discussions like the one you are about to listen to are only made possible thanks to the generous support of people like you. Learn how you can be part of our community at mwf.com.au/support. I hope you enjoy this episode. This event was supported through the Melbourne City Revitalisation Fund, a $200 million partnership of the Victorian Government and the City of Melbourne.
The last time I was in Australia was exactly 6 years ago in 2017. I've been away for a while. And yet I've also felt in touch. Not just in touch, but connected with you, with readers, so many of whom have reached out to me, particularly about Insomniac City, my memoir about moving to New York at age 48, falling in love with the city, and with my late partner, the author and neurologist, Oliver Sacks. I'm amazed by how many emails and messages I've gotten from around the world, but far and away, the most have come from Australia. You Australians get the prize for writing to writers. From Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane and Perth, from Coorongal and Bangalore and Kangaroo Valley and Byron Bay, I treasure these notes, many of which I got during the pandemic and helped make a dark time much lighter and less lonely. One person wrote to me anonymously from a part of Australia so remote he had to drive 20 kilometers to get internet access just so he could write me a note about Insomniac City. Apparently, he'd heard me on the radio, which prompted him to get a copy. It was the first book he'd read in 35 years, he told me, and he too had once loved and lost a partner, though he didn't provide any other details, whether it was a man or a woman or any other details. He wrote, "Your book evoked feelings that I have kept hidden for a long, long time, and reading it, I was overwhelmed by sadness, knowing what the ending would be. Apart from a few changes, our story is the same." Our story is the same. This has been, for me, the great gift and lesson of Insomniac City, that a book, words on a page, can resonate with a reader halfway around the world, someone whose life may, on the surface, be completely different from that of a 62-year-old gay man living in Manhattan. But when it all comes down to it, whose story, whose experience of love and loss, of grief and joy, is the same. This same fellow told me in his note that sometimes he, quote, goes back to Insomniac City, dips in and reads random pages, a story or two, and that helps ease his pain. "I am in your world," he said, "walking down city streets, meeting the people you did, listening in on funny conversations between you and Oliver." I knew exactly what he meant, because even for me, revisiting the book during the pandemic, paging through it, just looking at photos I had taken, was a reminder of why I had fallen in love with New York in the first place. You see, I stayed. I didn't leave the city when we went into lockdown in March 2020, like some did, moving upstate or even leaving the country. Not that I had a choice, I had nowhere else to go, but I was glad to stay, to see it through, to be a witness. In fact, when I think about it now, it was the city itself, not I, that went away for a while. New York, as I had known it, the New York of Insomniac City changed overnight into a never-imagined city, one where the streets were empty, the volume silenced, and the speed slowed way, way down, a place where people went missing. I often wondered back then what Oliver would say. Had he lived to see the COVID pandemic, he would have been in one of the most vulnerable categories, the elderly. He was also, by his own admission, a terrible hypochondriac, a prodigious hand washer and nail scrubber long before it became de rigueur. But then Oliver had also lived through the Blitz and AIDS and 9/11. As a young doctor, he treated survivors of the encephalitis lethargica pandemic of the early 20th century, his awakenings patients, as they came to be known. And he had faced his own impending death from cancer with uncommon grace and clarity. So I was pretty sure I knew what his response would be. A few months before he died at 82 in August 2015, Oliver looked up from his notepad one evening in our apartment and said to me, "The most we can do is to write. Intelligently, creatively, critically, evocatively, about what it is like living in the world at this time." So, I did. I wrote and photographed a book about the first 100 days of the pandemic called How We Live Now. And amazingly, even in that short time period, I saw the city begin to come back to life, culminating in the explosion of demonstrations following the murder of George Floyd in June. Some of these protests took place right outside my window on 8th Avenue at 14th Street, and I grabbed my camera and joined them. Whereas for weeks, all had been silent, ghostly, now the streets were filled with people, at times clashing with cops in riot gear, and the chanting crowds just yelled louder to be heard over the sound of sirens and helicopters overhead. In a mad rush, shops and restaurants boarded up their windows for protection. But in response, something quite beautiful happened. Those boarded up doors and windows became canvases for muralists and graffiti artists to create memorials and moving works of art. But this was just the first stage, the opening salvo, if you will, in the city's defiant return after seeming to go away for a while. I've come to think that cities are like bodies, our bodies, in the sense that no matter how much we age or change, we retain strong muscle memories. So despite what has happened over the past 3 years, all the lives lost, all the tragedy, when push comes to shove, New York still remembers how to be uniquely, unequivocally New York, which is to say, resilient, tough, kind, full of restless energy. I liken it, odd as this may sound, I liken it to my experience of returning to swimming when the pool in my gym reopened in the fall of 2020. It had been closed for almost 6 months because of the pandemic. I'd been away from the pool for so long, I wasn't quite sure I'd have the same stamina or technique I had when I was swimming regularly 3 times a week. I was a bit apprehensive as I sat on the pool deck and unnerved by all the COVID-related restrictions now in place at my gym. But I took off my mask, put on my swim goggles, and plunged in. The water was cold, cold. The pool must have been drained, cleaned, then refilled. Oof, I pushed off, arms outstretched in a V, legs in a scissor kick, until I surfaced about a third of the way down. My stroke immediately kicked in, as if not a day had passed since March. I'd wondered if it would take time to find my rhythm, to synchronize breathing with crawling legs and arms. But no, my body knew exactly what to do. Thrust, pull, kick, rotate, swim. I touched the wall, flipped, pushed off. Lap after lap, I just swam, grateful to forget about the pandemic, grateful for my health, grateful simply to be alive. My heart racing, my body darting through the water like a dolphin, freed from captivity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion and would like to support Melbourne Writers Festival, visit mwf.com.au/support.